You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. All right, and everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
We're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bartender did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, doing good, Shane. And we got a terrific guest lined up. We got Brett Cianca of Pick 6 Podcast. He's going to help us break down some of these SEC bowl opponents. So we've got some really great stuff lined up. But before we get to that, Shane, before we get into the SEC content, remember, we had Brett on the podcast earlier in the preseason, kind of share his thoughts on everything. And I know this is outside the SEC, but one of the biggest, you know, stunning things he said, Utah, one of his college football playoff picks that turned a lot of heads. I know it raised my eyebrow, and hell, they damn near did it, Shane. But they
so
came
close,
up
Mike.
Just short. But because we got Brett coming back on, we just found this clip. This is hilarious. This is the Utah head coach, Kyle Whittingham. They're playing Texas in their bowl game. And he was asked about his working out. And Tom Herman couldn't believe it, so I just knew we had to share this one.
Actually, for you, Coach Whittingham, I've worked out for six straight days. What is your workout streak, and how do you stay motivated?
It's kind of a sickness now. I've been doing it for a while. So what do you want to know? How many days I've done it, or what's your...
I think it was how many days have you done it and how do you keep motivated?
Well, it keeps me sane. If I didn't do it, I'd go insane. It's more for a mental deal than physical, but we're right around 4,000 days, give or take. So leave it at that.
Days?
Yeah, I'm trying to constantly...
That's real?
That's real. That's real. Like I said, it's an illness. It's a mental illness, but I'm constantly...
Like walking, running, what?
Yeah, running, elliptical, stair step, you name it, swimming, you know, something every day.
4,000.
4,000. Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, Shane, so... I did the math on this one, Shane. It's about 11 years
That's
consecutive
right.
working out. Sounds like he's got a streak as long as your streak away from the gym.
I was about to say, I'm about to start, Mike. You know, a streak's got to begin somewhere. But you know, it's the holidays. Everybody's bringing this stuff to the office. It's like, you know, I'm all pumped up, and they're like, "Hey, did you try June's fudge yet?" Like, no. Where's it at? January's right around the corner, man. I'll start after the Gator Bowl. How about that?
Sounds good to me, Shane. You ready to go around the league?
Yeah, man. Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
My daughters said something about me wearing a visor and need to put on a hat because I'm getting bald. So I'm going to wear a hat from here on out.
I mean, if you look over the next 6 years, I think we played Miami 3 times, Florida State 6 times, South Florida 3 times, Mississippi State 1. So who's the SEC teams? You know, I mean, I think it's an injustice for the kids. We should mix those games up, and you should, play more teams from the West.
Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
At Louisiana, hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
SEC! SEC! SEC!
All right, Shane, before we hit on some of these teams, just wanted to get your thoughts on this. This week, the SEC announced the 2019 SEC Football Awards. There's not a ton of them, so, you know, we don't have to spend a half the damn show on this or anything, but this is voted on by the SEC head coaches. The only stipulation is you cannot vote for your own guy. So here we go with the offensive MVP, Joe Burrow. I don't think there's any surprise there. Mm-hmm. Defensive MVP, Derrick Brown from Auburn. Special teams player of the year, Jalen Waddell from Alabama. Freshman of the year, mm-hmm. Bo Nix from Auburn. The Jacobs Blocking Trophy goes to the SEC's most outstanding offensive lineman, goes to Andrew Thomas of Georgia. And then Coach of the Year, Ed Ogeron. Coach O. Shane, thoughts on those selections?
Dude, I'm trying to think if I would go. I mean, the only one that would be close, and I'm not saying that it's like night and day, but, you know, Freshman of the Year. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he beat Alabama and, you know, I can't see going. I mean, maybe what's his name? LSU cornerback, mm-hmm. you know, Stingley, maybe something like that. But I think I'm going to go Bo Nix on this one as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, Shane. I was hoping you would say that because I saw a ton of reaction where, you know, Stingley made the big play there against Auburn. He picked off Bo Nix. He made some big plays there at Georgia, obviously. I think they would have even won without Stingley's performance in the SEC championship game, but he stepped up in a big-time way, showed his presence. Everybody on the national stage got to see what Derek Stingley's all about if they hadn't seen him before, made the big plays in the Florida game, including essentially the game-defining interception in the end zone. So mm-hmm. there was a lot of buzz. Derek Stingley should have got this award, and I see what people are saying, and I'm about to piss off LSU fans, but I just think it's a little bit tougher, and I'm not saying it's easy to be a defensive back in the SEC as a freshman. That's incredibly hard, but I just think it's a lot tougher to be a quarterback, a starting quarterback in this league when you got to face the likes of Alabama, Georgia, LSU. They went on the road to Oregon. I mean, that was just a hellacious slate, and yeah. I know Bo Nix didn't come out of it looking like a Heisman contender, but I think anyone with realistic expectations didn't expect that from him. But, you know, from the highlight of that Oregon game when he threw the touchdown to the back end when he's beaten Alabama, I have no problem with Bo Nix being Freshman of the Year. And, again, that's not to say Stingley doesn't deserve it. I'm sure he was the runner-up. But I was kind of surprised at how much, you know, outrage I saw from that one. And then the only one that I kind of take exception with, I was kind of surprised you didn't go here, Shane, Jacobs Blocking Trophy. Nothing against Andrew Thomas. He deserves this award. There was no backlash to it, but I would have liked to seen Trey Smith win that one. Mm-hmm. Given everything that, you know, he didn't even get to play most of last year or the tail end of last year. He barely even practices. He's not allowed contact until Saturday. And he's just out there mauling people. So I kind of would have liked to seen Trey Smith get a little extra recognition there, get that Jacobs Blocking Trophy. That would be pretty much the only gripe I have on this one.
I'd say I didn't want to sound like a homer. Obviously, I really like Trey Smith. I love his story, but it's a shame they couldn't give that trophy to the entire Kentucky offensive line, you know, because what they've been able to do this season has been amazing. You know, a lot of people are excited about Lynn and everything he's brought up there to the university. But, you know, it all started in the trenches, and those boys made some spots open for Lynn to get those crazy 200 rushing yard games. So that's the only – maybe I could see that, you know, but it's an individual trophy. So I'm not opposed to big boy down in Georgia because he is a damn brick house, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Oxford.
Auditorio, miss.
Well, I feel like we're going to be jumping down to Oxford a hell of a lot more now with old Lane Kiffin down there.
Isn't it awesome? Isn't it great? I mean, it's nothing against Coach Luke because, golly, you know I was high on Luke there for a long time. But now it's just kind of exciting. What's going on down there in Ole Miss? I mean, he's just tweeting out these pictures all the time. I'm following his timeline. I'm like, what's he going to do next? I don't know. You know, NCAA is already down there. He got set up a little mobile office, you know.
Well, right before we hopped on here, Shane, Ole Miss has named their offensive coordinator. They went with Jeff Libby, and that's a name that a lot of SEC fans probably not familiar with. He was the Central Florida UCF offensive coordinator the past 2 years. They were averaging 43 points per game. I've heard a lot of good things about this guy. I know Jeremy Pruitt almost hired this guy, Shane, to be his offensive coordinator. This guy's very well respected. And, you know, what's funny about this, another layer, you know, a lot of people thought Kiffin was going to look at Kendall Briles, his former offensive coordinator down there at FAU last season, Florida State offensive coordinator. Jeff Libby, this guy here, is the brother-in-law of Kendall Briles. So that's just fascinating. And I guess that what that says is Kendall Briles is probably going to take a head coaching job somewhere. I have no idea of where that could be, but because you got to think that would be the natural hire. And then he probably let Kiffin know, hey, I'm getting a head coaching job. Maybe you'll look at my brother-in-law here, Jeff Libby. He's killing it down there at Central Florida. I know they had, you know, that quarterback, Mackenzie Milton, who did really well till he got injured. So this is, you know, it's going to be Kiffin's offense, but Jeff Libby, I think, I really like these coaches that bring in people that, you know, not yes men by any means, but someone that can kind of bring him new ideas, new schemes. And with Kiffin down at FAU, I'm sure he had his eye often on UCF and what they were doing. I think I can't come up with anything negative to say about this. I think this is a really good hire, up-and-coming hire here by Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he is young. I mean, real young, and doesn't have a lot of experience. So I think it's going to be more of a Kiffin offense with, you know, Libby eventually taking the reins, I would imagine, you know, once he learns, once they get their style meshed together, you know. It should be exciting. He's hired a couple of coaches, hasn't he?
He has. Well, that was the only one we were unaware of. Then the other two were the ones he announced during his presser. Kevin Smith, who they've not assigned yet. Likely he's going to be the running backs coach. And then Wilson Love, the strength coach. But it's funny that you mentioned that, Shane, because according to Aaron Suttles of The Athletic, Lane Kiffin, now this is kind of hard to believe, but this is straight from Aaron Suttles, a piece he wrote this week. Just, I believe this came out on Wednesday. He says Lane Kiffin took this Ole Miss job specifically to get back at Nick Saban for firing him at the end of that tenure there at Alabama. And he says he's trying to hire the strength coach, Scott Cochran,
to on-field.
And here's the thing. So Kirby tried to hire Scott Cochran. Jeremy Pruitt tried to hire Scott Cochran. Why would Lane Kiffin get Scott Cochran when all these other people have tried and failed? Well, according to Aaron Suttles, they're offering Scott Cochran a role on the coaching staff, not strength staff, but actual coaching staff for the 10-man staff. So it's going to be interesting to see, Shane, if they finally – I mean, it almost seems like Kiffin's hiring this guy just to take him away from Nick Saban. But, man, this is just adding to the intrigue of Kiffin in the back in the SEC. I don't know if this is true. Again, this is Aaron Suttles reporting it of The Athletic, but it just man, it just makes it that much more intriguing if that's really where Kiffin's head is at.
Boy, that almost feels like a spot hire, man. You know, I mean, he's, you know what I'm saying? He's, like, you know, a lot of people have crowned him as the best, you know, strength and conditioning coach. And the fact that you're just going to remove that completely and put him on the field, it almost feels like, I mean, put him at a position that he's never done before in his life. You know, it just feels like that's just a stab. So if it happened, but, you know, I've heard a couple other interesting names. I heard T. Martin was one that he was kind of looking at, too. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be looking at a lot of guys in the SEC. I think most of his moves are not going to be made to just kind of hurt other teams in the SEC, but I think he sees the value in these guys. Now, to get a guy like T. Martin, he may have missed the boat, because I think he would have to give him offensive coordinator duties. Maybe he'll give him co-offensive coordinator. I think I'm not sure if T. Martin has that title at Tennessee right now or not, but yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think this is going to be a staff with this heavily SEC influence, so that's just something to keep in mind, Shane. But Kiffin, recently here on Wednesday, he was on the Dan Patrick Show. He had a chance to kind of needle Saban, which is that's why it's kind of interesting when you got these, you know, these reports that he's kind of coming after Saban. And then in the public view, like we're about to play you here, Dan Patrick asked Lane Kiffin, how much longer is Nick Saban going to coach? And I was kind of surprised by what Lane Kiffin had to say here.
How long do you think Saban's going to coach for?
I think a long time.
Really?
Know? Yeah, I do. I mean, what else is he going to do? I mean,
does he have any hobbies?
He does golf, but he's miserable. So, and I mean that in a way, but he's it's why he's so good. He is singularly focused on the University of Alabama and football at Alabama every minute of every day. Even if he's golfing, even if he's on a boat, I mean, you know, he's got his recruiting calls to make every night, whether it's Christmas or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Every day is the same, and that's why he's so good. So I don't know how he could retire. I think, you know, my dad's like that. And yeah. My dad's turning 80 this year and still coaching for us, walking around the field, you know, meeting with players, you know, helping young coaches. So, you know, there are certain people like that. I call them like prisoners. Like, they can't go in the real world, like Shawshank Redemption, you know, when Brooks Hadler goes in the real world, he can't do it. He's like, wait, I need to be in prison, you know, so they come back.
Well, I remember Brent Musburger telling me that Joe Paterno would die on the job because he's a lifer, that, you know, that you're afraid to stop.
All right, Shane, so you heard it there from Kiffin. He doesn't think Nick Saban's going anywhere anytime soon. And I guess when you put it this way, given his connection to his father and seeing that his father still has that drive to keep coaching, I could certainly see that. What were your thoughts when you heard this one?
Man, all I can think about that is old man at Shawshank Redemption, you know. And I could see Nick having a pet crow named Jake, you know, and just feeding him little baby maggots, you know. Like, that's his hobby. So, I love this. And he's right, you know. But it's not just football. I mean, you see this everywhere, man. I mean, think about jobs you've had in the past. There's those guys that just, they don't have no quit in them. They're afraid to quit. You know, they want to keep going. They want to have something to do. You know, our grandfather was like that. He didn't want to quit, and they forced him to do it, and he had to find stuff to get into, you know, to stay busy. There's just, that's that old school mentality, man. You know, I mean, this is, you got to think, that's a different generation, man. And those guys have gone through some tough times, and I'm with him. I think Saban's going to coach I think when he notices that he's not got it all mentally, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not wishing it on him or anything like I ever said, it ever happens. But I think Saban is smart enough to know that when he can't, you know, if he loses any cognitive function, I think he's out. You know what I'm saying?
But now you got me thinking, Shane, any chance this was a dig by Kiffin to say, hey, he's that old damn man from Shawshank? Where
he's whittling his initials wherever he goes.
Here's another way to look at this. Kiffin could be right. I mean, Saban could be a lifer here. And there was a time when Joe Paterno, you know, his Penn State tenure, you know, kind of went sideways. They were losing a lot. And then they managed to fix it there towards the end. I don't think Alabama fans, as great as Nick Saban is and everything he's done for them, if he starts going 8-4, 8-4, 9-3, hell, I think they're going to fire his ass. I mean, with the expectations he's set up, any chance that happens?
Yeah, maybe it is a dig, you know? I mean, you did compare him to 80-year-old Monty, you know? I mean, think about that. 80-year-old Monty, he compared him to his dad. And Monty doesn't want to let go of the game either. And I think you're right. I think Bama expectations are extremely high. And this is just they're pissed, man. They didn't make the playoffs. You know right. what I'm saying? I think they do have a great team. But if Tua was healthy and, you know, things would have went a little bit different, especially that LSU game, you know, the Auburn game. I mean, anything. They'd be right in the mix. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know how short – it sounds so stupid, man. I don't know how short Saban's leash is, mm-hmm. you know, and if he even has a leash. But I think if they just continually miss the SEC championship and the playoffs from here on out, eventually something's going to give. They're not going to go the Mark Richt route with this one, you know.
Right. All right, Shane, let's jump down to Columbia, Missouri.
M-I-Z!
We're old – Eli Drinkwitz made a couple of coaching moves here. So he's bringing two guys from Appalachian State to Missouri. That's official now. Charlie Harbison, who they have not officially given a title. They're just saying he's a defensive coach. I believe he coached outside linebackers, I think, for Appalachian State. So it's going to be something like that. Eric Link, who coached special teams at Appalachian State, is going to do the same thing for Missouri. And then I can't recall if we hit on this or not, but he's expected to bring back Ryan Walters, the defensive coordinator, Brick Haley, the defensive line coach, David Gibbs, the cornerback, all from the previous staff. Now, it's going to be interesting because there's rumblings. We'll get to Arkansas in just a moment here, but there's rumblings that Barry Odom headed to Arkansas. He may try to get some of these guys to come with him. You know, you can't blame any of these coaches here for they're under contract, so they got to earn their money, and Barry Odom is currently unemployed, so they got to think of themselves here. So I understand why they're accepting these roles here with Missouri, but I just think it'll be fascinating to see if Barry Odom gets a job, if he tries to hire any of these guys to come with him. That's something to watch out for. Now, as for coaches that are not coming back to Missouri, these are official. Andy Hill, the previous special teams coach, he's out. Carnell Ford, the running backs coach, and A.J. Ofadal, the tight ends coach, he's out. These are all-time lifers there at Missouri, so it's kind of like a changing of the guard. You kind of expect that because Eli Drinkwitz didn't have the connections there in Missouri, but I just wanted to make note of all those changes. Thoughts on Eli Drinkwitz? Kind of got to get his own staff in there, don't you think?
Yeah, and this is something that I'd like to ask Brett about a little bit, you know, just because he's probably dealt with more of his coaching style and what we'll probably see next year in the SEC from coach here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's making moves. He's doing the right things. I seen him on the Twitters, you know, kissing babies and shaking hands this week and talking to recruits, you know. So he's out there. He's doing his thing. And I don't know. This is the one I'm most interested in. It feels like I know what I'm going to get with Lane. I know what I'm going to get with Sam. I don't know what we're going to get out of Mizzou next year right now.
All right, Shane. Well, let's jump on down to Fayetteville where
Woo Pig
Cam Curl, I thought this was pretty surprising. Defensive back announced he's leaving to go pro. Now, I guess maybe it's not surprising in the sense that obviously it's going to be a new coach, new system, so maybe he just doesn't want to learn everything all over again, but that was pretty surprising to me. I thought, he could use another year to help his stock, NFL stock there. But in addition to that, Shane, Sam Pittman keeping Justin Stepp, the receivers coach, is a guy who's a longtime Chad Morris assistant, was with him at SMU. And I really like this move here by Sam Pittman because Justin Stepp, probably the best recruiter on Chad Morris's staff. You know, he was a guy that was instrumental in getting Treylon Burks, Trey Knox, Shamir Nash, all these guys to Fayetteville this time last year. And Treylon Burks was just named all SEC freshman team. Trey Knox, we've seen enough from him to know that he's a quality SEC player. So, you know, it's really important, I think, for those players to keep the same position coach. And maybe even Sam Pittman looking at this like, if we get rid of this guy, we may lose some of these talented receivers. So, And it kind of goes the theme with what Sam Pittman said when he got hired. You know, it's not going to be ground and pound, smash mouth. I think if it was, I don't think he'd be keeping this receivers coach. So that's an important note. But thoughts on that, Shane, where Sam Pittman keeping a little continuity. We still don't know who the offensive coordinator is. We don't know who the defensive coordinator is. But like I said, Barry Odom's the popular name. It looks like he's going to head down to Arkansas. Waiting for that to be official. Not saying it is, but all indications are Sam Pittman going to keep he's for sure keeping Justin Stepp, but he may be getting Barry Odom, which I think that'd be a hell of a hire.
Dude, that would be a home run hire if he could get Barry, you know? I mean, somebody that's been in the situation that Sam's currently in, you know? So I think he'd be a great mentor and they could build around that. And, you know, that's what he wants. I know he's talked about the RPOs and being a little flashy and having fun and stuff, but you know, Sam's a lineman, man. And you know, we like it playing physical offense, physical defense, and that's something that Barry can bring to the table. So if they're able to get him, I think that'd be a fantastic hire.
Yeah, and here's another way to look at it, Shane. So Missouri, I think they've done arguably a better job than Arkansas, recruiting the state of Arkansas under Barry Odom. So he's got those connections in that state already. Players and coaches, high school coaches, can, you know, trust that Barry Odom is going to take care of their players, because these players have done fairly well for Missouri. And then, you know, we had TJ Moe on last week, and he was talking about how Barry Odom kind of bridging the gap there in the state of Missouri. So, you know, Eli Drinkwitz is not going to have any relationship right now with the coaches in Missouri. So Barry Odom, you're looking at, he may be a better recruiter in the state of Missouri than damn near anyone on Missouri staff. He may be the best recruiter in the state of Arkansas on Arkansas staff. So outside of just his knowledge, his history, his everything that comes with getting a guy like Barry Odom, I think that could be a great recruiting hire too for Sam Pittman.
Absolutely. I mean, they're saving a little money with Morris down there in Auburn staff payroll now, you know what I'm saying? And they're not paying Sam that much, and I think they can afford a little bit more for these assistant coaches. So I hope they give them some money, man. That'd be awesome.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Gainesville, where there's a buzz that Dan Mullen may be interested in them Dallas Cowboys. Now, I think this was kind of pure speculation. This all started because of the NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, who is actually, he's very plugged into NFL circles, obviously working at NFL Network. But, you know, they were asking him who he thought would be the next Dallas Cowboys coach. And the one name he gave out was Dan Mullen. Now, I'm not saying Dan Mullen's going or anything, but here during the, you know, the bowl prep, whatever, Dan Mullen was actually asked about the NFL. I don't know. He had some interesting comments here.
You know what? I've never been in the NFL, so it's not even something I've even thought or considered. You know, I've never even been an assistant coach at the NFL. So, you know, in life, if it does, if someone ever calls me, then I would probably consider it then. But it's not even something I've considered at this point.
All right, Shane. So I think Dan Mullen kind of handled this almost as well as you could have. You know, he could have just said, you know, I'm not going to the NFL. I've never thought the NFL, but I at least can appreciate his honesty here to where, you know, it would make him think. But I also think he makes a lot of good points here that, now we've seen it. We've seen it with a guy like, who was that former Texas Tech coach who now he's the Arizona Cardinals coach? I mean, Kingsbury. I mean, these moves do happen, but I don't know if it would make a ton of sense for the Dallas Cowboys, a established brand that big, to hire someone that's got no NFL experience, never even been an assistant at the NFL. I mean, how's this guy going to build an NFL staff? Is he just going to bring college coaches? I don't know. But just what are your thoughts on Dan Mullen, just the speculation that he could potentially be Dallas Cowboys coach?
You know, I was listening to something the other day, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but they were talking about this, and they were talking about the next Dallas coach that comes in. You know, if they do come in, Jerry Jones has, you know, he's the GM, and, you know, it's he'll always be the GM. So if a head coach comes in like Bill Parcells did in the past and said, okay, if I'm going to take his job, you know, I'm going to have full reins. This is my team. I pick who we draft. I pick, you know, I think if Jerry didn't want to deal with that, but wanted to deal with a good X and O coach, I think Dan Mullen would be a good hire, because somebody that's not done, it's not going to argue about the GM situation. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing that he's not going to have to worry about. He's just going to have to focus on the development and the players on the field, which he's really good at doing, you know, identifying talent and building a team up. So I don't think it would be a crazy hire. I think it'd be something that Jerry Jones would consider, but I don't know if he's big enough for Dallas. I know it sounds crazy, but I think they're thinking, you know, they're thinking somebody else. And this, if you listen to the questions, it didn't, you know, there's no other articles writing about Dan going to Dallas. You know, this is just something that kind of flared up. So I wouldn't get too worried if I'm a Gator fan, but do know you got a hell of a coach down there, and there's going to be some people trying to steal him in the future if they keep these 10 plus win seasons up, you know?
All right, Shane, gun to your head. Dan Mullen is offered the Dallas Cowboys job. Does he take it?
Hell yeah, he take it. Why would you? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
That's exactly how I feel, but I also agree with you. I don't think he's on the list or at the top of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. What about Saban? I mean, one last. Can I start that? Can I start that rumor? You know, he wants one last run at it, and
he's running from Kiffin.
Well, maybe it's the whole Dak Prescott thing. That's probably where it came up. I'm trying to think how it came together. So, yeah, it's not going to happen, but it's still fun to talk about.
All right, Shane, we've got some news here. We're going to group it together. Texas A&M and Mississippi State. A defensive lineman for the Aggies, Justin Matabuke, announced he is going pro and he will not play in the Texas Bowl against Oklahoma State, while Kylan Hill from Mississippi State, running back, SEC leading rusher, announced he is also going pro early, but he will play in the Music City Bowl. So thoughts on these, Shane, where I think Matabuke, you know, he's been Texas A&M's best defensive lineman this year. There's always money for these defensive linemen. I think he's making the right move. He led the team in sacks and tackles for loss. I mean, this guy had, how many times you see an interior lineman have over 100 tackles in his career playing just 3 years? And really just two for the Aggies. So Justin Matabuke, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think he's going to be a first rounder. Kylan Hill, I think he could be a really good pro. I don't think he was necessarily going to be a first rounder, but I almost always encourage these running backs that as soon as you can make that money, go make it, because this, you know, the lifespan is just not that good in the NFL for a running back. So I think I'm on board with both of these decisions.
Yeah, me too. Hill's been flirting with it for a few days now, messing with people, so at least we don't have to see his tweets anymore about it.
All right, final thing I got here, Shane, jump on down to Athens. The Bulldogs, Shane, first fallout from Sam Pittman because Joshua Braun, one of their elite offensive linemen, has decommitted from the program following Sam Pittman's departure. Sounds like, I believe he's scheduled to take a visit to Florida leading up to the early signing day. He picked Georgia over Florida, so it certainly sounds like he's given Florida every opportunity to flip him. And then big news here, Shane. I've been cleared by the NCAA. I'm allowed to discuss this recruitment. Tate Ratledge, their other, well, they've got several linemen committed, but one of the better ones here, who his recruitment, I don't think it's open necessarily, but Matt Luke, they sent, it's funny because he goes to a school, Shane, it's called the Darlington School.
Yeah.
As soon as Kirby showed up, as soon as Matt Luke showed up, man, this the official Darlington School account's posting photos, you know, they're trying to get people to come to their site. Check out all the photos with Kirby and Matt Luke meeting with Tate Ratledge here. Yeah. And then here on Thursday, Shane, Tennessee, they sent the Moose down there.
Uh-oh.
Brian Niedermeyer. And no photos came from the Darlington School. So, I don't know.
Did he not get to come in a helicopter too?
I don't know who's running that thing, Shane, but I think it's pretty clear they're a Georgia Bulldog fan, and there's nothing wrong with that. But just think that's funny. What thoughts on that, Shane? Georgia's one of their key recruits, getting Tennessee treatment here by the ace recruiter, national recruiter, reigning national recruiter of the year, Brian Niedermeyer. I think what Tennessee's rooting here for. Now, Tate Ratledge is not expected to enroll early. So I think just the hope is if you're a Tennessee, if you're another school trying to recruit this kid, you're just trying to just tell him don't sign that dotted line until February. Give us some time here.
Did K transfer too? Is that true? Have you heard that?
The K train? No, he's still in Athens or something.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'm just getting... Man, I'm just trying to get this hot train fired up, Mike. You know what I'm saying? It was funny when the first kid decommitted. I was reading a few of them, and it's the same every university, including Tennessee. You know, when one leaves or decommits, it's like the first 20 responses, like, yeah, we're just making room. You know? Bigger, better things are coming, Mike. You know, it's like the same response. What's the one that they always say? Cycled, not cycled out, but
processed.
Processed. Yeah, he got processed. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I did notice the Tate. I was curious because the very next day, there's Coach Luke in his new gear, and they're talking about the helicopter flying in and how great they had. And I nothing about the moose going down there. So I thought that was kind of funny, but you gotta be careful, dude. Moose is a hell of a recruiter. So there's no telling what he said to Tate. So I don't know. This is going to be an interesting one, but he's going to be a tough one to flip. His dad's done put that decal on the truck, you know?
All right, Shane, that's all I got. So let's hop on over to our interview with Brett Cianca of Pick Six Previews.
Let me go grab another beer first.
All right, so we're pleased to be joined by Brett Cianca of Pick Six Previews. You can follow him on Twitter, at Pick Six Previews, one of the best Twitter followers there on the entire platform. You know, he comes with the preseason magazines. He's did that before the season. I was fairly new to his preview magazines. He gave us a preview edition. It's the best one on the market, without a doubt, in my opinion. And thanks to all his work with the magazine, with his Twitter, his outstanding following there, he is now an official Heisman voter. I believe this is the first Heisman trophy presentation that he has voted for. So we're pleased to be joined by Brett Cianca. Thanks so much for joining us, Brett. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for all the kind words. And for Cousin Shane, I don't have any beer cans to flip open this time around. I tried that in the preseason on the show.
I got you.
But I will give you a hey, buddy, for sure. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me back on. I'm excited to be back on. It's been a heck of a season. Like Mike said, the book really took off and gained some Heisman Trust attention. So it's been truly an honor to vote on that award. I think it's, to me, it's really the ultimate honor in college football. So I don't view that lightly. It's been quite an accomplishment. I'm proud of, and yeah, it's been an exciting season. I'm ready to break down these bowls for you guys.
Well, before we get to the bowls, I just wanted to ask you real quick, how does that come about? Because I would think most of our listeners, obviously they all know what the Heisman Trophy is, but none of them are official voters. How does that, come about? I mean, I was very curious to hear that. Not surprised that you got a vote. I think you probably should have gotten one a long time ago, but I'm just curious about how that all came about, and I bet it took you about half a second to accept.
Yeah, of course. Now, yeah, thanks for the comment there. And really how it works with the Heisman is I think there's about 900 votes nationally, right? And they break it down into four regions. So you have your Mid-Atlantic, your South, the West, and the Midwest. And amongst each region, each state by state, it's broken down state by state, the amount of FBS teams in your state. So I'm based out of Pennsylvania, actually. And so we have Pitt, Penn State, and Temple. There's three teams. So there's X amount of votes, right? And it turns out that the guy in charge of PA region, Pennsylvania, ended up getting my book and was blown away. He was asking me, you know, how many writers do you have on this thing? How many editors? And when I kept telling him, it's just me, he was blown away. So, I gladly accepted that Heisman invite. I mean, it was just truly an honor. So I was just blown away by it too on my end. So kind of just happened, and here I am. And like I said, it's just the ultimate honor. And this goes out to really all the followers and all the podcast hosts like you guys that have, you know, brought me on their shows and shared my stuff on Twitter and have, you know, spread the book. Because really, this started out of thin air back in 2012, and it's been a daily thing, and we built it, you know, from the ground up. And similar to how you guys have built your podcast and show and Twitters organically, a lot of respect for doing it on your own, like you guys are, and same from my end. So, it's been a journey, and it's just another step. I want to build this into 2020 and keep the momentum rolling.
Now, my only other question about the Heisman, it's my understanding that you're not allowed to talk about who you voted for until it's official. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is true. Can't reveal that until Saturday night. And just knowing how college football Twitter works, I might never reveal it, you know, because you're never right. You know, you're going to get a lot of complaints either way. But, you know, all four candidates were incredible this season. I could have listed out another four or even 40 for that matter. So many just incredible individual performances we saw all season. It actually really was a tough task whittling it down to three, because the Heisman works where they send you the ballot, and it's three blank lines. It's not like a drop down menu where you pick out of these, you know, pre-selected candidates. It's, you're filling out 1, 2, 3, and it's a blank slate. And so you gotta come up with your own three guys. And it was hard to whittle it down to three, like I said, so all very deserving. And you guys got to witness one in your own conference this year, with Joe Burrow. So it's just incredible stuff.
So real quick, so this isn't an email or anything like that. This is a legit postcard that you've got to, is it like a super secret wax seal you got to use? Or is this, I mean, how is this one of those things you got to?
I was actually a little bit bummed. I kind of wanted to get the big paper ballot. It's actually electronic now. But okay. The crazy thing is it was the most secure thing I've ever signed into. It was like three, multi-factor sign-ins, like three different passwords. Then they call you and give you the code to log in. It was actually incredible getting in there. But once you get in there, you feel like you broke into like a safe or something, But it was a pretty unique process, and I'm excited to continue going forward.
All right, Brett. So the real reason we wanted to have you on, Heisman talk aside, obviously all these bowl games, Shane and I, we just deep dive on all these teams in the SEC, but we don't really follow the teams outside the SEC. So we knew you'd be the perfect person, considering you break down the entire Power Five, every conference, every team. Give us your thoughts on each one of these games. We're just going to go game by game, and we got to start because of our Tennessee homer there, Cousin Shane. Let's go to the Gator Bowl, where Tennessee is playing Indiana out of the Big Ten. And as of we recording here, Tennessee's favored just slightly by 1.5. What can you tell our listeners about Indiana heading into this matchup with Tennessee?
Yeah, so Indiana, you got to picture where they're based. They're in the Big Ten East behind all those four powerhouses, the Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State batch. So every year coming in, it's always a race for fifth almost. So, the same thing kind of held true this year. They got blown out by Ohio State by 41. Michigan beat them by 25. They kept it close with Michigan State and Penn State. They couldn't get the job done there. But on the other flip of the coin, they won a lot of one-score games against other Big Ten opponents, beating Maryland and Nebraska and Purdue. A decent resume. They're 8 wins, which is a pretty much a high point for Indiana the last quarter century, I'd say. So you got to credit Tom Allen, the other head coach. One other note for Indiana, obviously in the college football playoff this year, 3 of the 4 teams are transfer portal quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that is the respect of a guy that stays, right? So Peyton Ramsey, he was a starter for a year or two, had an incredible completion percentage. I think it's actually a school record. He comes back, he actually loses his starting job, stays around on campus. And this is pretty rare nowadays. A guy would just jet to the portal, stays on campus, starter gets injured, and Ramsey comes back in and kind of leads the winning streak. So it was cool to see a guy stay with his team, keep working at it, and then getting the call again and winning some games. So it'll be a tough game. My game grader formula actually agrees with Vegas here. I actually have it -1, just like Vegas. I'd lead in Tennessee. I mean, yeah, obviously it got off to a rocky start. We were joking in the pre-show, me and Cousin Shane, because I go back and in the offseason, I listen to many podcasts, but definitely this one for the SEC, and this has my full endorsement for the SEC podcast. But so I'm in the point of the season where they lose to Georgia State, and it's I hate having to relive that, Cousin Shane. I think the Tennessee has certainly rebounded well, and they've beaten some teams they should have, and got some stretch wins too down the stretch. So I'm going to go with Tennessee -1 and straight up, obviously.
Yeah, you may want to skip a few weeks in that pot.
I don't even want to get to the point of that BYU Hail Mary.
Yeah, it gets a little dark, man. Well, let me ask you on this Indiana, what type of offense are we going to see here? Is this going to be I know we were talking about Ramsey. Is it going to be a spread style? Is it going to be up-tempo? Just what kind of offense would we expect to see here?
It's nothing too particular. It's kind of your normal Big Ten offense. They have a feature back. It's not really a back by committee. It's Stevie Scott. He's nearing 1,000 yards, and last year I think had over 1,000. So picture a feature back offense. There's really no differentiator outside of that. Really not much to worry about, I think, for Tennessee, because, again, when you break down these close wins, they easily could have lost a couple of those games to some really poor teams. Maryland, one of the worst in the conference. Purdue struggled this year under Brohm. And then Frost year two for Nebraska was pretty weak. So, in fact, they barely beat them and got blown out by really the two top teams in the Big Ten. I view them more as a 6-6 kind of team. So I think Tennessee continues to roll. This is the kind of team that Tennessee has been beating, and I think that'll continue.
I like it.
All right, let's kick it down to the Belk Bowl down in Charlotte. We got Kentucky. Now, they're the only team of these SEC ones in the postseason that is not favored, according to Vegas. Virginia Tech favored by 3 over Kentucky. What can you tell us about Virginia Tech?
Yeah, so with Virginia Tech, coming into the year, Fuente was a little bit on the hot seat, their head coach, Justin Fuente, and the season got off to a terrible start. In the first half of the season, they were bottom 10 in my game grader, so really rough start. A couple FCS wins mixed in there. But really, the light switch went off when they switched quarterbacks. They brought in a guy, Hendon Hooker. He's a runner, but also very efficient in the pass game. He's 11 touchdowns and just 2 picks. So since making that switch, they're 6-2 and top 20 in my game grader the second half of the year. So picture going from bottom 10 to top 20. Definitely a midseason turnaround, and they're coming in pretty hot. You know, the ACC isn't exactly the the strongest league. It's probably the weakest of the Power 5. So take that with a grain of salt. But they did beat up on Wake Forest, which is an 8-win team, and almost knocked off Notre Dame. So I think this is a pretty solid team, and I can understand why Vegas might be leaning their way. But here's the thing about Kentucky, and I know you guys have covered this on your show all season, but what Lynn Bowden did is just absolutely incredible, taking over as your makeshift quarterback, running some wildcat, but it's a damn efficient offense over there. And it kind of brings me back to what I mentioned with the Heisman list, kind of, you know, you start with a wide scope. I mean, why not consider him for something like that? I know, obviously, you know, you whittle it down, but just an incredible performance by him, especially down the stretch against Louisville. I think he went for 250 yards, and it was just incredible to watch, just to see an SEC team really running that offense and winning games, incredible. So I'm kind of torn there, and my formula agrees. I have it as a pick 'em. So I guess the value would be on Kentucky's side there. But look out for a kind of a red hot Virginia Tech team who's going to be angry after losing their rival game to UVA there.
Let me ask you on Virginia Tech, as far as rush defense, because that's what they're going to see quite a bit of, how do they compare against the other teams in that conference?
Yeah, so rushing defense, they are pretty solid there. They're top 30. So their average is 3.5 yards per carry, top 30. So I think that it'll be a tougher rush defense than Kentucky faced in Louisville. Previewing that game a few weeks back for the Commonwealth Cup there, or the Governor's Cup, I believe it's called. So Louisville's rushing defense was pretty poor, and you saw what Bowden did to it. This will be definitely a step up. Another thing to consider, too, talking rush defense, Virginia Tech, it's Bud Foster's last game. Of course, that's the legendary defensive coordinator back from the Beamer days. I think he's like in his 30th year, but his final game. So you gotta imagine they're going to go out and inspire defense and try and shut down the Wildcat. We'll see.
Okay. Man, that sounds like that could be one of the sneaky good early bowl games. That's one to look forward to. Let's kick it down to the Music City Bowl here in Nashville, where I'm from. Mississippi State, 3.5-point favorite over Louisville. What can you tell us about the Cardinals?
Yeah, so Louisville, we're talking about probably the worst Power 5 team last year. Now, this is a team where, of course, that was Petrino and his staff. And, you know, there's rumors that the staff kind of quit on the team, and then the team quit on the staff. And it was just a pretty poor locker room there towards the end of the year. Vegas really couldn't keep up with how bad it was getting. They kept lowering the spread each week, and they kept lowering the floor even worse. So picture that's what Scott Satterfield took over. Of course, this is the App State coach that won all those games at App State. He's taking over the worst situation. He turns them around, you know, in one season back to 7-5. They're the most improved team year over year in my game grader. And when you're starting that low, it's pretty easy to do, right? But still, but really the key differentiator, which I noticed, was they're pretty resilient. They're 3-0 in one score games. That's beating Boston College, Wake, and UVA. Those are three bowl teams too. So the fact that we go from, you know, the mentality of a poor locker room situation, quote unquote, to then a resilient team and down the stretch in close games, you know, you got to credit Satterfield's turnaround. So, and what you're going to see out of Louisville, really an explosive offense, but they really can't stop anyone, as you saw in the Kentucky game. Really the headliner is probably Javian Hawkins. They're running back. He's nearing 1500 yards for the season as a true freshman. So really just explosive plays out of him and guys like Tutu Atwell and Seth Dawkins and Fitzpatrick. So, it's been a great turnaround, and you got to give Satterfield credit. He won't show up on any Coach of the Year lists, but when you consider what he inherited, it's pretty impressive.
And that's one Joe Moorhead desperately needs to win, especially after Lane Kiffin getting hired at Ole Miss. Kiffin's getting all the buzz in that state. If Joe Moorhead can't win that one, My God, he's going to be sitting on the, probably the hottest seat in the SEC.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. Real quick on that with Moorhead, I saw a lot of Rutgers Twitter. I know that it's it's weird to imagine, but that does exist. Yeah, but some Rutgers fans were tweeting about how, you know, oh, don't give us Moorhead, don't give us Moorhead. It was a bizarre exchange after they fired their coach. It seems like nobody wants Moorhead. Maybe the all the publicity has worn off. But, yeah, he desperately needs this one.
All 12 of them.
Yeah, right. I didn't even know it existed, but they're out there.
Let's kick it down to Houston for the Texas Bowl. Texas A&M, 4.5-point favorite, according to Vegas, over Oklahoma State. And I don't know if you heard this, Brett, but just on Thursday, Justin Matabuke, Texas A&M's outstanding defensive tackle, he has announced he is leaving school early for the NFL, will not play in the bowl game. What can you tell us there about Oklahoma State?
Yeah, so with Oklahoma State, first on a program level, this kind of gets overlooked nationally, but they're top 10 in wins in the last decade. It's been a very consistent program. They're consistently number two in the Big 12 behind Oklahoma. Mike Gundy's got them averaging 9.3 wins a year over the decade. So they're always right there. It's a matter of how great his quarterback is. It sounds funny, but when he has an elite quarterback, they're, you know, in the mix for a Big 12 or a BCS bid like they were in 2011. Without the quarterback, they fall to 6-6 or 7-5. So it was trending in that first category as the season was developing with this new true freshman, Spencer Sanders, a dual threat guy. But he gets knocked down a couple weeks ago out for injury. So they had their backup, Drew Brown, a Hawaii transfer in there. And the offense kind of fell flat. The main storyline this year was probably Chuba Hubbard, the nation's leading rusher, almost at 2,000 yards and 21 touchdowns. And he was a guy that was kind of on the Heisman radar there. It's rare for a player from a team that's not competing for a conference title or national title to be on there. He was deserving. I wanted to see him in the rivalry game against Oklahoma to end the year, see if he could have gone off for, say, 200 or 250, something crazy, rushing yards to really cement his seat in New York. Came up short. Oklahoma pretty much shut him down. Not having the quarterback certainly hurt. So, from A&M's perspective, and you guys have talked about this, but it's pretty rare to see a team just the contrast of their wins and then the losses. I mean, they got hit with a terrible schedule. It's so hard, and they end up losing all five of those tough games, but then smoke the other seven. So hard to gain, you know, where they're going to shake out there.
Have you heard any of Oklahoma State's guys sitting out for this game?
Yeah, so the status there with Spencer Sanders, the quarterback I mentioned, he's doubtful. The issue being that, you know, he's coming back from his surgery. I think he's starting bowl practice on December 17th, which Gundy said would be halfway through their bowl season anyway. So I don't know. There's no decision there, but that'd be doubtful or at least impactful that he's missing half the bowl practice. The other guy, Hubbard, that I mentioned, he's also questionable too. He's looking at draft grades and all that off the field stuff to see whether it makes sense to come back next year to play in the game. That's kind of a newer fad we're seeing the last couple of years. So and that's one thing I forgot to mention at the top. In my preseason book, right, I'm researching this for months. I'm watching hours of game tape, listening to shows and everything. And you can really make calculated decisions. Bowl season, you can throw that out the window because you have coaches coming and going. You got players, you know, some guys don't want to be there. That's the old expression. Some players are sitting out for the pros. So there's just so many variables. It's hard to get inside the mindset. But try and stick to the facts as much as I can. I'll tell you what, A&M's rushing defense will have to step up. I think they're middle of the pack nationally, somewhere in the 50 range in rushing defense. They're going to get tested against Hubbard, so it'll be a good test. And without Matabuke, like Mike mentioned, might be a difficulty.
All right, let's jump on down to Tampa for the Outback Bowl. Auburn, 7.5-point favorite according to Vegas. They're playing Minnesota. What can you tell us about the Gophers?
Yeah, Minnesota is also one of those surprise teams that not many people saw coming. I know I actually didn't see it coming either. I remember watching their spring game, and I just remember thinking, man, they only run one play. It's just this slant pattern, this RPO slant. And here we are, you know, 10 months later, they're still running that same play, and people can't stop it. So I got to credit the quarterback, Tanner Morgan, and their pair of receivers. It's really a great duo. It's Rashad Bateman and Ty Johnson. It's really just a bunch of slant patterns, some RPO, and then a couple of deep balls, and they're making plays over the corners and the linebackers. So what looked simple in the spring game tape, I guess it is still simple, but they're executing it. So Hats off to Fleck and him motivating that roster. A team that doesn't recruit with the likes of, you know, with Nebraska and Ohio State and Michigan and those types. But remember, they beat Penn State and they were a game away from winning the division. But when it comes to this this Auburn matchup, I think that they have a serious issue in the trenches. When you look at Minnesota's, both their losses came to Iowa and Wisconsin, who are, in my opinion, two of the strongest teams in the conference in the Big Ten, really built in the trenches, and that's where they got outclassed. So when you try and line them up against Auburn, Auburn's defensive line might be the best in the country. Coming into it, I thought Utah might have been number one, and they were until the Oregon game, but I'd probably say Auburn right now. So I hate to see what Auburn's D-line does to this team. I think I'd take Auburn with whatever points they have at Vegas.
Yeah, and we still don't know if Derek Brown, Auburn's outstanding defensive lineman, if he's going to play. I know he mentioned that on Thursday during the College Football Awards. He said he's definitely got a decision to make because you got to think he's going to be a high NFL draft pick. But, you know, you mentioned those games Minnesota didn't match up in the trenches. Did they get blown out in those games that they lost, or were they relatively close? Because if you look at Auburn, yes, they have a couple losses, but, hell, you're talking to number one, to number seven, to number five. I mean, and those games, they were competitive. So, you know, Auburn is a couple plays away from a college football playoff team. So do you think Minnesota can compete with a team as talented as Auburn?
Yeah, so your question was, were those games competitive? The Iowa one definitely was. And now that was a one-score game. Minnesota actually outgained them by 150 yards. It was almost like the better team lost there. So I will give Minnesota that one. But in the season finale against Wisconsin, you could throw that out the window. Wisconsin won by 21, outgained them by 100 yards. Jonathan Taylor did his normal thing, just going off for 200 yards or whatever it was. So they really got outclassed there. And it starts to make you wonder, you know, you can view those other close games differently now. Mm-hmm. Beating the Penn State game, while it was a huge win, it was only by 5. They got outgained. And then when you look back at their September, I know it seems like, it is 10 games ago, but their non-conference was against South Dakota State, an FCS team, Fresno State, and Georgia Southern. And all those were one-score games. They were barely beating terrible teams. I know they've obviously evolved since then, but one last note on Minnesota is they went through a pretty lucky stretch where they were playing all the backup quarterbacks. So in their first, I think it was 5 or 6 games in the conference, it was all backups. Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers is bad enough anyway, but for whatever reason, they were just hitting these backup quarterbacks. But to their credit, they took advantage and blew everyone out. So just another thing to consider when you're breaking down that 10-2 record. You want to dig in a little bit deeper, you know?
It's also something to consider. It's going to be -8 degrees up there Saturday, so Tampa is going to be a shell shock to some of them boys.
they're going to be cramping up.
That's what I'm thinking. Down there. They ain't going to be able to handle them sugar huddles, man.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump on down to Orlando to the Citrus Bowl. We got a marquee matchup here. Alabama versus Shane's favorite coach in the world, Jim Harbaugh's Michigan crew. Mm. Crimson Tide only favored by a touchdown. I thought that was pretty shocking when that line came out. What can you tell us about Michigan, and what's your initial thoughts to that line?
Yeah, well, quickly on the line, I mean, I think that's part of not knowing what kind of Alabama roster we have coming out. Like I said, we don't know. I think I'm still waiting to hear back, and correct me if I'm wrong, whether that whole pack of rising juniors and seniors is going to leave early and not play in the bowl. So super question mark with Alabama. I think that'll correct itself once we hear either way on if they're all playing or not. Speaking of Michigan, so you guys got to witness firsthand the offensive evolution at LSU. Where they were, a traditional power offense, getting shut down by the conference power, Alabama, and went pass heavy and brought in a new guy, and it clicked. So Michigan tried to do the same thing, right? They were getting shut down by their power, Ohio State. They couldn't get it done with their traditional offense. So they go out and they brought in Josh Gattis from Penn State, who I guess he looks like the poor man's Joe Brady, but it was the same idea to make it a passing offense and kind of spread the field and really just try and do what LSU did. Now, the difference was LSU had clicked in week one, and it's been incredible. It's been, all kinds of all SEC and every, congratulatory thing you can say about it, Heisman, everything. So, but with Michigan, right, it took half the season to really start to develop, and it's starting to click, but it's nowhere near what LSU's putting out. So the thought and the intent was there. The results didn't really match what you saw in Baton Rouge. but kind of from an SEC angle, that's what you can kind of view Michigan as. You know, within their season, they started pretty rough. Army actually had them beat. Army was going to beat Michigan in the Big House. It was the next App State moment. They came up just short. A couple weeks later, Wisconsin finished the job and put up like 50 points on them or something crazy and just blew Michigan out. So, but since then, so I broke it down first half, second half again, like I did for, I think, Virginia Tech. First half of the year, it was not the Michigan you thought you'd see. Second half, though, they're like a top six, top seven team nationally. So they're surging right now. I know the Ohio State game happened, and we'll see if that continues, if a similar power like Alabama can blow them out like Ohio State did. But it's a different Michigan team than we saw in September.
And is the quarterback still Shea Patterson, former Ole Miss quarterback? I mean, he was a five-star. He never really lived up to the hype there in Oxford. And from all I heard from Michigan, it kind of sounds kind of similar deal there with him up in Ann Arbor, maybe not quite that five-star hype.
Yeah, so it is Shea Patterson. He struggled first half of the year, like I said. And really, once the offense started going, it was good and bad, right? So the bad was that they lost their run game. They really have no run threat. I think they're 100th in rushing offense. So they really went pass heavy. And in most of the games in the second half of the season, it was clicking pass-wise. So Patterson actually set some school records. Now, you got to take it with a grain of salt, considering Michigan was always your traditional I formation, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. So the quote-unquote school records for passing are probably something like, you know, 300 yards or something. But, no, he set some passing records. It was productive. He was spreading the ball around. But against Ohio State, really just neutralized. And we don't know how great this Ohio State team will end up being. I mean, obviously, it's a top two, top three team. So take that with a grain of salt. But, yes, it's Patterson. They have some playmakers on the outside. It's a five-star, former five-star Donovan Peoples-Jones. Nico Collins is stepping up. But really, yeah, no run game. I think that when you make a team one-dimensional against Alabama, I think that they're going to feast on it. So let's see what kind of personnel goes or stays for Alabama. But even the backups, like some young guys getting playing time, I still would probably lean Alabama.
Hey, I want to ask a question. You know, the NFL, I mean, there's that calling is always there. Is there any rumors to, you know, this may be the last year we see those pleated khakis on the sideline?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard any rumors that way. I think that, you know, I think it's his dream job. I think it really is. It's alma mater. Obviously, he played there. And you see a lot of complaints from Michigan fans about saying they should fire him. But you got to remember what he inherited 5 years ago. Now, this was a program that was pretty much run down by Rich Rod and Brady Hoke, who all he did was clap on the sidelines the whole game. So he has really turned it around, and Don Brown, as defensive coordinator, has kept them in contention in the top 10 and top 15 of defenses every year. It's been solid play. It's just when you're comparing yourself to Ohio State, which right alongside Clemson, Alabama, have been, you know, the class of college football of the last decade, it's going to look bad. You're 0-5 against Ohio State, but you're pretty damn good against everyone else. So to the Michigan fans complaining, I don't know who else you'd get. I mean, I think that you let this offense hopefully continue to develop and see where the cards lay, but I don't know who else you're going to get. He has them recruiting pretty well. He's got Michigan relevant again, and they're a top 15, top 10 program right now. So, you know, it's more the fact of Ohio State being a power.
You can get Butch Jones pretty cheap. I mean, just throwing that one out there.
Still on
there.
The market?
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately.
Still on the, I think he is, right?
Yes, fetching coffee for old Papa Saban.
All right, let's kick it down to the Orange Bowl. I'm still not sure how we got this New Year's Six matchup. Florida versus Virginia. The Gators are 2-touchdown favorite. Shane and I continue to tout that the Gators should be a top-5 team. I mean, hell, they lost to Georgia. They lost to LSU. Everyone else, they're wrecking. What can you tell us about Virginia? Do they have any shot here against upsetting the Gators here?
I'm going to say 0% chance. I mean, I really didn't like that whole automatic bid thing. And, you know, I put a couple tweets out about it. It's something that maybe if they were – there should be a rule if you're 10 wins and above, maybe get that auto bid. But we're talking about a 9-4 team in by far the worst conference. I mean, the ACC really is pathetic this year. I'm not going to say every year because they've had some top years. This year it's a pathetic conference. Mm-hmm. So anyways, you have a 9-4, a 9-win team coming out of there. Roster talent, they average 55th in the 5-year recruiting ranking. So When you compare that to the blue chips that are loaded on both sides of the ball for Florida, you're going to see a talent gap. Now, I got to give some credit where it's due. I mean, Bronco Mendenhall, he took over a terrible program in UVA, you know, coming off some 3-2 win years. So he's got him back to respectability. He's got him. He won the division for crying out loud. So it's been a great turnaround. It's one of those deals where he's maximizing what he has. It's like I said, he doesn't have blue chip talent, but he's getting out wins and competitive football teams and a strong defense. But it really is a one-man team on offense. It's really Bryce Perkins, the dual threat quarterback they have. If you watch the Commonwealth Cup, the UVA Virginia Tech rivalry, this guy went off for like 250 rushing yards from the quarterback spot. So I think that if Florida can shut him down or make him one-dimensional, which I think is a definitely, you know, I'd lean that way, then I think you make this team one-dimensional and pretty beatable. So Vegas has it at 14. I think I might do Shane's old $100 bet on that one. go Gators big.
Ready to lock it down.
All right, let's jump on down to the Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans. Georgia, favored by 8 against Baylor. We're just coming off that Big 12 championship game. I thought Baylor impressed me. What can you tell us about the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Baylor from a program scope, right? They had that losing culture. They had the scandal. They bring in Matt Rhule, and he turns this thing around out of nowhere. They went 1-11 his first year, but then he increased that up to 7 wins. Now he's got him right on the brink of the playoff discussion, which is incredible. Specifically with Baylor this year, it's been a lot of close games. You got to give them credit for being resilient. It doesn't really stack up in my game grader, which factors in. Obviously, one of them is margin of victory and yardage differential. So while their win column looks very impressive, a lot of these could have gone the other way. So from a forward-looking predictive model, it's not as impressive. You're talking about, they beat Rice by 8, Iowa State by 2, Texas Tech by 3 on a very controversial overtime call. West Virginia, another bad team by 3, TCU by 6. So these are all pretty much losing teams, barely beating. Now, all that, you can throw all that out the window. What we saw last Saturday in the conference title game was pretty impressive. Even with the third string quarterback, they had Oklahoma on the ropes. One note for Baylor I want to get in there is this is the number one improved defense from 2018 to 2019. And I actually put this in my book. I didn't think it would be this great an improvement, but I had said that their defensive coordinator, Phil Snow, his defense usually takes 2 or 3 seasons to be fully implemented and to see the impact. And this is year 3. It's very complex, and I figured this might be the jump. Now, I didn't expect it. They jumped 75 spots. That was incredible improvement. They cut off 12.5 points per game defensively. So just incredibly improved there on that side of the ball. And it gives them a punching chance in all these games. So I just don't see them matching up in the trenches. I think Georgia's offensive line might be the best in the country. Don't really know what happened in that title game against LSU. We just saw a team totally outclassed. Makes me wonder, and you guys can hop in, obviously, being the SEC podcast, but it reminds me of Alabama and LSU, say, 5 years ago when they hadn't made the offensive jump and they hadn't modernized and gone spread what Georgia's doing. It looks like Georgia's still in 1980 offensively, last time they won a title. So I wonder if this might be the year that it wakes up Kirby Smart to want to maybe modernize, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, if he don't, his ass is going to be out of there because Georgia, they won a national championship, and I don't think as well as Kirby's doing, I don't think they're going to give him, you know, multiple years here to figure out this offense.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, too, what's going on with the coordinator spot. I think after these bowl games play, I truly think Kirby's going to make a splash hire as far as offense is concerned.
Let's kick it down to the playoff game here. Final SEC bowl game here. LSU versus Oklahoma in the Peach Bowl. It's going to be in Atlanta. The Tigers favored by 11.5. What can you tell us about the Sooners?
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, from a national perspective, a lot of times I hear some broadcasters refer to this as an air raid pass offense. I mean, that's pretty far from the truth when you look at their play count and their snap counts. They're 60% run plays. It's a very balanced attack. It's, you know, they have a physical, downhill, powerful run game. And yes, I mean, they do have the explosive plays in the pass game to complement it, but this is a run-first package, especially this year when they have Hurts as, like, bulldozer at a quarterback. I had to look this up, but he's over 1,200 yards rushing himself, Jalen Hurts. So I think he got a lot more rushing attempts than he did at Alabama. But this thing's clicking on all cylinders. So a lot of talk has been about LSU's offense, and rightfully so. but I ran this back. Over the last decade, there's been some, 1,200 FBS teams or, 1,300 FBS teams and offenses. Only three offenses in this decade have averaged over 8 yards per play, and that's 2017 Oklahoma, 2018 Oklahoma, and 2019 Oklahoma. So this offense, man, it's the three best of the decade, and it's all Lincoln Riley and his schemes. So with that said, I think it's going to be a ton of points scored. They might come in nationally, people viewing the game thinking it's going to be all passing, but Oklahoma is going to want to run the ball between the tackles with a quarterback power game, some zone read, and even Hurts scrambling on pass plays. So, and you've seen that over the years in Alabama, his ability to extend plays. But, it's going to be an incredible matchup. I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, and if there's one game you may have not missed, this kind of flew under the radar for a lot of people, I would think, nationally. If you want to go back, maybe something you're going to see in this game, watch the LSU versus Ole Miss game. It was only about two or three games ago. Ole Miss ran all over LSU. So that's something to consider. This could be a preview of that. If that's what Oklahoma does to him with Jalen Hurts, LSU could be in a little bit of a dogfight here.
Yeah, absolutely. And another difference with Oklahoma this year is their defense kind of improved finally. If you go back about a decade, it was actually Brent Venables that was here, and he had Oklahoma consistently right near that top 25 mark in defense. And I know to the SEC listeners, you're thinking, wait, the Big 12 used to play defense? Like, what it used to be a solid defensive program. But so Venables obviously goes over to Clemson. Oklahoma's defense just falls apart. And they've been, ranked below 100th for a couple years in a row here. This year, Alex Grinch came in from Ohio State, previously Washington State, and actually improved them 50 spots. They're up 10 points per game defensively, and it was the fourth most improved defense. I know I said Baylor was number one. Oklahoma was number four. So they're improving on defense. It's not there yet, but I don't think LSU's is a quote-unquote right there yet either. So I think it's going to be a lot of offense and two of the Heisman finalists, both deserving of their seats in New York. And that is a good point bringing up the Ole Miss game. I think that Ole Miss went for 400-something rushing yards. So if they allow Oklahoma to stay ahead of the chains and get 8 yards a play like their season average, it's going to be tough. It's going to be high scoring.
So let me ask you on the Oklahoma thing, just because I didn't watch any Oklahoma except for that championship game, and it felt like every time Baylor had a quarterback out there, it was different than the one they had prior to. I think they got down to the third string, and they were still able to move the ball. Is that by design? I mean, was that just a fluke, or are they going to have trouble keeping? I mean, because Joe's ridiculous right now. Mm-hmm. He's on fire. I mean, do they have a shot to slow down this LSU offense?
I don't really think so, to be honest. But, because you look back at some of these games, Kansas State, that was Oklahoma's loss, obviously. They lost by seven. They gave up a ton of yards. And that was to a team, the only Power 5 team without a four-star or a five-star player on the roster is Kansas State, and they lost. So you talk about maybe going from that end of the spectrum mm-hmm. to LSU, which is top five, just blue chips galore, and you've seen what they've done on both sides of the ball, especially offense. It's going to be tough slowing them. But the only difference here is that Oklahoma still outgains teams. I mean, they might give up 400, but they're going to put up 700,
Right,
their
you.
Average per game, they're plus 220 yards per game. So, and even the Baylor games, I look back at those because they're just statistical anomalies. Oklahoma won them by 3 and by 7 points, one score mm-hmm. games, but in yards, it was by 220 and 180. So, I guess the final score wasn't as close as we're seeing. The last bit, and I'm talking a lot here, but the turnovers. Really, Jalen Hurts has had some turnover issues. That's the only difference between when you're trying to parse out the final score and the yardage. The difference being there's some turnovers happening in the red zone. A lot of it are Jalen Hurts. So fumbles, forced throws in the end zone. So he's got to cut down those if Oklahoma wants a chance.
All right, last thing I got for you, Brett. I don't know if you're prepared for this, so if you're not, that's fine. But do you have a national championship prediction between these four teams? Do you have a feel for who's going to win it all?
I'll say this. I think 3 weeks ago I would have said Ohio State hands down because in my formula and just from watching them, and it's been some tough games too, right alongside LSU's schedule, but they've been dominating everything in their path. You know, actually, I applied back my formula back to some of these historic teams like 05 Texas, 01 Miami, and even last year's Clemson team. Mm-hmm. This Ohio State team through 12 games was right there with all of them. They were historically great. And then what we saw against Wisconsin, that was kind of a red flag. You know, first half, Wisconsin just came out and punched them square in the mouth. Got to give them credit for bouncing back. I know it's tough to beat a team twice. All the buzzwords you can throw out, but Ohio State was resilient in the end. In a weird way, I just feel like Clemson might be the best team, the most complete team. They're flying under the radar. Everyone's getting on them for their schedule. But really, the core of this team is back from last year, a team that destroyed Alabama and went through a tougher ACC last year. It's really tough. I don't remember a playoff bracket coming in where you had three legitimate teams that can make an argument as the best team. So I think we're in for a treat this year. There's no fraud team like we've seen in past, like last year's Notre Dame team, where you just knew they're going to get blown out. They just had to be there by default. This is probably the first bracket where all four of these are legitimately, you know, qualified and deserve their spots. So we're in for a great one. I'm going to go LSU out of that semifinal. I'll go Ohio State out of their semifinal. And for the SEC listeners, you hope that means a rematch and a recreation of that 07 title game. Down in New Orleans, same location, same teams, and LSU destroyed them last time, so we'll see.
All right, Shane, you got anything before Brett, before we let him go?
How mad at Utah are you right now? I felt bad for you.
Oh, my gosh. My youth. No,
I watched that Oregon game, and I was just like, oh, my God, Brett's going to be pissed. Because I thought for a second, a brief moment, there was going to be a chance Utah snuck into this thing, and I felt bad for you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think a lot of us became Ute fans. So to those that haven't that are unfamiliar, what happened was in the preseason, I put out my book, right, and my Final Four, I had Utah in the playoff. And of the other 15 preseason publications that are out there on newsstands and websites, Utah's average rank was 15th preseason. So to put them fourth was a huge, outlier compared to the national consensus. And I believed in it. It was this defense that was super strong and a very veteran offense. But the key thing being an easy schedule. And they rode that schedule all the way to the Pac-12 title game. Was getting a ton of new friends from Utah, as you can imagine. A lot of new followers hopping on. So I was on like every radio show up there. They love me in Utah. At the end of the day, the talent prevailed. Oregon was they've been a recruiting power, relatively speaking, within the Pac-12. And the better talent ended up ruling. So, but Shane, I saw your tweet there. I was up in Seattle for Washington versus Utah, and heck of a comeback win for the Utes. And I think you tweeted something along the lines of seeing Jacob Eason ruin the game for Washington, or like a sabotage or something. I put in, but it was pretty funny. But yeah, heck of a trip.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, one last thing. I just want to ask you one last thing because, Mike doesn't – I mean, you're the only one I'm allowed to have an interview with. So this is an exciting moment for me. And not to mention your book's the only book I read once per year, you know. So it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, and I just want to ask you just a couple quick questions. First off, it looks like the Cincinnati Bengals are going to have the first pick, you know, and I'm not real familiar – with Chase Young, but I'm hearing a lot of people saying that there's a good shot that they may take him instead of Joe Burrow. Is that crazy talk, or do you think Joe's still going to be the first kid off the board?
Yeah, so comparing the two prospects, I mean, Chase Young is all he's hyped up to be. I will say, I mean, I've watched probably 10 of their 12 games at this point, and I'll catch up on the rest in the offseason, but he's just a force. You always look to see where he is pre-snap, and you're like, all right, he's on that end this time. He's on the right end. Let's see what he does. Your eyes are automatically attracted to him. Certain games this year, he's just dominated. He's taken over the entire game. Penn State comes to mind. I think it was like three sacks in a couple series in a row. It was incredible. Wisconsin, the first time around, he was blowing up the line, and that's against arguably the best offensive line every year. So he's doing it against solid teams and lines. It's not like he's taking over a weak offensive conference. But anyways, he has all the measurables. He's fast. He's just a freak athlete. So I think that he'd be up there too with Burrow. And to be completely honest, I don't really follow the NFL outside of my loser Philadelphia Eagles. But so I don't really know the specific team needs the Bengals have. But if they want to build a program around the QB, I mean, it's hard to ignore what Burrow has done with an NFL offense. So It's more a team need thing, I'd say.
All right, and just one last question, since now you are picking the Heismans for us. Is there somebody on the short list that you're looking at next season, somebody that maybe is not in contention this year, but you see that will, you know, somebody that will pop in the SEC next year?
I mean, so the boring answer would probably be Trevor Lawrence. I mean, this is a guy that still has been incredible. He's on the best team. I think that his slow start out of the gate really kind of damaged his perception nationally, and the other quarterbacks took advantage. That's really tough because I want to see what kind of transfers happen. I mean, this could look completely different a month from now. Trying to think. Coming into this season, I thought that the Georgia running back room would produce one, maybe DeAndre Swift. But I know that they'd love the spread that carries around. I don't have an answer for you there. Give me a couple months, and we'll reconvene and talk this preseason.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Well, look at Shane.
Thank you guys for having me.
Shane asking the tough questions. That's the first time in this podcast history.
Shane had the knockout punch.
That's right. Was that Dana Walters or something like that? You didn't see it coming. I'm going to have people crying before you know it.
How about Kellen Mond, maybe? Can I sneak one in? How about a Kellen Mond breakout year?
Yeah, I think that's a good selection. If he takes the next step in Jimbo's system, they're going to have most of their weapons back. I think that could be a solid pick right there. All right, so that's Brett Ciancha of Pick 6 Previews. You can follow him at Pick 6 Previews. You got to get his preseason magazine. It's the best on the market. Thanks so much, Brett, and a new Heisman Trophy voter. That's just awesome. That's an outstanding honor. I really appreciate you hopping on and giving us some insight on these other teams. We'd be pretty clueless without your insight there. So just couldn't say thank you enough.
Yeah, thanks again, guys, for having me on. And like I said in the tweet I put out there, I mean, full endorsement on my end from your guys' podcast. I try and find a show or two from each league that in the offseason I can go back and kind of relive or rewind the season and really take notes on. And because once the season starts, as you guys know, it's going 100 miles a minute. You're just trying to absorb as much info as you can. But now in the offseason, I'm going to go back and watch or re-listen to all the shows that you guys put out. And I just love that you guys cover all 14 teams in depth. You get press conference sound bites in there. So it's not always, you know, it's good opinion. It's some fact. It's some live reaction. It's hilarious banter. I think I put out there the best laugh in podcast game is Cousin Shane. But it's just an enjoyable listen. So I'll continue to get you guys attention on Twitter, and I think it's well-deserved. So thanks for having me on. I'll come back anytime, and we'll talk again in the off season.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Brett. Take care.
All right. See you, buddy.
See you, guys. Thanks.
All right, Shane, so that was a hell of an interview there with Brett Ciancha of the Pick 6 Previews. Some outstanding stuff there on the SEC bowl season here. I really, really appreciate all that insight he had to give our audience on the other teams there because, you know, Shane and I are never ones to BS the audience or anything, and we just felt like you guys deserve a little bit better insight than we're able to give you here on these other teams. So really appreciate him once again for hopping on here. You can give him a follow at Pick 6 Previews. Check out the website, pick6previews.com. He does an outstanding job, and his Twitter is not only very informative, but it's pretty funny. He'll tweet out some things that always make me laugh. So I want to thank him again for coming on the show. You got anything before we hop off here, Shane?
Oh, no, that was fantastic. And I think this is going to be the first year the SEC has gone undefeated in bowl play, Mike. I think it's going to happen. I'm looking at these lines, and I know Brett had a lot of great things to say, but I'm still going to lean heavy SEC this week or these coming weeks. So I am excited about the Army-Navy game coming up. You know, it's a time-honored tradition, so I'll be watching that. I hope everybody's tuning in again. Well, you know, there's not that many Saturdays left where we're going to have a college football on. So sponge it up. Have fun. Let's make some money during these bowl picks, Mike.
Yeah, without a doubt, Shane. Well, that's going to do it. If you made it this far, if you wouldn't mind just going a step further, giving us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, that really helps the show out. We'll send you a koozie free of charge on us. One other thing, I've been meaning to say this more often, Shane. The music for this show comes via Nashville band Crimson Calamity. They're offering up their music to us for free. So give them a follow on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, Spotify. Again, that's Crimson Calamity. So give a shout out to those girls for allowing us to give some quality music here on the show. Well, that's going to do it, Shane. Thanks for joining me as always. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.
Without a doubt, without the fuck? I'm losing it, man. Without a doubt, Shane.
You've been hanging out with Shane too long.